Love Talk Radio.
Hey, and welcome to the Kay Thompson Live Show. It's that time once again on a Wednesday evening at 8 o'clock on the blogtalkradionetwork.com, blogtalkradio.com/KayThompsonLive. I am what's affectionately known sometimes by my mom as the son, sometimes known as other things when she gets mad, but also known as Eric Payne or Citizen Payne to some of my friends, or there's a special nickname that a special friend used to call me. We'll talk about that a little bit later. And very few people know that. And you are?
I'm Kay Thompson. Want me to tell people who I am to you?
No, you can
just talk. Okay, I'm Kay Thompson. And with my son here, Eric Payne, here on Kay Thompson Live. And we always bring you news, information, and educational issues and things that are recently in the news. And, of course, you know, the race for the presidency is still in the news. We haven't been able to dump Trump yet, but I certainly hope that people will come out and vote. If you happen to, you know, if you haven't registered, yeah, I think there might still be time to register to vote. You know, Eric, I listened to, hello, is Wayne there? Wayne Gilman, are you there?
Hi, good evening, Kay. How you doing, Eric?
Good evening. Fine. How's everything going?
I don't know. I was pretty excited about what happened the night of the debate. I thought our candidate did well, but the polls seem to be in question, you know, or I just think it's a lot of double talk, and it just shows how racially divided this country is, in my
opinion.
Isn't
that amazing?
You know, it's sad.
Go ahead. It is bad. You know, it's not what I expected. I don't think a lot of people expected to be in this position with this kind of person, and they haven't found a way to dump Trump yet. And he gets on and he lies about what he heard. He's from another planet because he's not real. But anyway, I hope people, you know, will get out to vote, will register to vote. What about you?
Well, I'm registered. I mean, the thing is, as far as I'm concerned, I'm hoping everyone who really, anyone who witnessed the last 90 minutes of that debate, you know, and saw his facial expressions, his gesticulations, the sniffling, the this, the that, you know, the lying back and forth, the no apology to Barack Obama over Bertha, all these issues, we could go on and on. And, you know, it's just sad that America on the whole, I mean, if there is that much support for him, why are they constantly giving him a pass every time he doesn't do well? You know, it's not enough. If you're not qualified to run for the seat, then don't run. You know, that's the way I look at it. It's almost like as if, and I speak primarily of what I hear from some of the broadcasters out of Fox, that, you know, those who support Donald Trump feel that because he has not been in this particular setting as a politician, and he's constantly mocking those who have been, but he still does not understand the process. All he talks about is what he plans to do, and we can't even get a definitive plan out of that. You know, you ask him a question, he comes back with the same pat response. I mean, anybody sitting there could see this. You know, his misogynistic tone. His, you know, the fact that, you know, he's proud that he didn't pay his taxes. That means he's smart. Let me try to get away with that. Let you try to get away with that.
I know, but Wayne, you know, he is not a real person. I think that he is some made-up, you know, mannequin or something that somebody has put there just to bug us or something, because he can't be real. He lies. He doesn't understand what's going on. And right now I'm laughing, you know, at him, because he is not real. First, I was, you know, really very angry with him, but he is just not real. He cannot be president. I hope people really realize that, or else we're going to be in deep trouble.
Right. And I wanted to say, just to recap, you know, we had, they said about 84 million people watched that debate, the largest since Carter versus Reagan in 76, I believe. And I believe it was 76 when Carter. Was it 76 that he first ran, or maybe it was his reelection, which might have been 4 years. 76, yeah. And say it might have been up really upwards, closer to 100 million, because those were just on network TV, the 84 million, and not that didn't include streaming sources, internet, and things like that. So the same, probably close to about 100 million people that probably watched that debate. And you know, for me, Donald Trump, we all know that he makes things up. We all know that he's a liar. And just the fact that you lie during the debate, where it's obviously proven that you're lying, you know, the things about calling the woman Miss Piggy and all that, things about saying we shouldn't go to war when he said we should. These are obvious things, and he's on tape saying these things.
Yeah.
And so what we know, and most of us that live on the East Coast are very familiar with Donald Trump. But the thing is, it highlights, and there's really nothing new about the divide in the country. It's just now with this type of information, this technology, we're able to notice it and see it, just like all these murders of black men. It's always been going on since the beginning of the United States. It's just now that we're more aware of it. Donald Trump is, he's evidence, and he's the end result of the Tea Party, of the Bertha Movement, and things like that. And the disrespect, the contempt that he shows for the African-American community, after Lester asked him, do you apologize, or what do you say to the African-Americans that after you kept up the Bertha issue, after it was solved, you kept it up another 5 years? And he says, I say nothing, because I ended it. So this is the height of arrogance, but this is what we expect from an individual.
Well, he also said, Eric, that he did us a favor.
Right,
that is unbelievable.
A rich white man, and really it shows you really how extreme, how mad some people were, a lot of people that happen to be Caucasian, and how very mad they were that a black man got elected, that they happened to choose Donald Trump, because look at all the other choices they had. They had Jeb Bush, who was supposed to be the guy. They had Rand Paul. They had Chris Christie. They even didn't choose the next most extreme guy to Donald Trump, which was Ted Cruz.
Uh-huh.
They chose the biggest, loudest, most obnoxious, name-calling bully he can, who represents to them, a lot of them say, tells it like it is, because he's politically incorrect, because he calls Mexicans rapists before he says, some are decent, that the way he talked about President Obama, the way he kind of promotes to the alt-right, which is that kind of almost neo-Nazi movement, a conservative right-wing movement. So he appeals to a lot. That's why you have a lot of non-college-educated white men voting almost 50% for him.
Yeah.
And in the Republican primary, the statistic was 90% of people, because a lot of people who happen to be Caucasian, a lot of them feel, not a lot, but some of them feel that they're losing their grip on this country, that this is not their country anymore, which really it never was. It's supposed to be a diverse country. It was the Native Americans. But their way of life is changing. So they choose the most extreme version of what they think is a strong white gentleman, and who has no manners, no coup, talks down to people. So it was really and he really proved himself to be an idiot. But, of course, the next day he attacks the woman who claims that he called her Miss Pixie. The next day, he spins and says he won the debate. You know, but this is like Hillary said, he lives in his own reality. And you know, after he did his whole dance, and he said he didn't go after as hard as he could because he thinks that somehow going after Bill Clinton's indiscretions is a way to get at Hillary, which is the height of misogyny and male chauvinism, to accuse the woman for the indiscretions of her husband. That would be a disgusting thing, but clearly we are dealing with a disgusting individual.
Yeah, you know, I can't help but laugh at him now, you know, because I don't really believe he exists. You know, he must be a figment of our imaginations or something, because it is just so unreal. He is a mannequin. I'm quite sure that somebody put a radio, you know, inside him so he could act like a real person. But he's a joke. He really is a joke. Except that, you know, the thing is that he is playing a joke on the other on people, you know, and not necessarily black people or some black people are going along with it. But it is absolutely unreal. And if he gets to be president, I just think that this is going to be the most dastardly thing to happen to the United States of America.
Also, too, I mean, we're talking about the Trump. I wanted to briefly recap about Donald Trump and the gentleman that got shot in San Diego, another black man getting shot. But I have a guest on the line, and you probably want to get in on this, sir. This is Larry Cherry, who we're going to be tonight. Let me just preface by saying I lost a very good friend of mine, a good friend of ours, a lot of ours, on Saturday, the actor Bill Nunn. And he's been a friend of the show.
Yeah.
He's been on this show before. And he's been on your show, Mom, when you were on WLIB before. And he's someone I've known ever since I did the movie School Days. And he was like a brother to me, like a brother to our guest, Larry Cherry. And hopefully a number of other people will call and give tribute to Bill. So we're going to be talking about Donald Trump and the debate and politics really briefly. And we're going to get into giving tribute to our brother, Bill, who we love dearly. But and Larry, being that you're a New Yorker, Larry Cherry.
That's correct.
Let me preface with Larry. First, let me tell you all who Larry Cherry is, okay? I met Larry Cherry on the set of School Days all these years ago when I met Bill Nunn. And the three of us became really good friends. We kind of clicked. It got each other's sense of humor and things that we would say. Bill and I, being actors in the film, we met the first week. We were down there a week before everybody else rehearsing. Myself, Bill Nunn, Branford Marcellus, Lawrence Fishburne, Kadeem Hardison, and James Bond.
Okay.
We were the fellas in the movie School Days. So Spike wanted us to come down to really get rehearse and get to know each other so we would have a camaraderie. And Bill Nunn and I needed to work on my accent as a Southerner. I asked Bill, and he had a cousin-in-law who was a real country guy from Alabama, so he would bring him by my hotel room. And so we just became really good friends. I got Bill's sense of humor. He's just a gracious, fun guy, big teddy bear of a guy. And Larry Cherry was the hair guy. And so if some people saw the movie School Days, and said I had a lot more follicles back then, but it was just beginning that it was going to be a question. And Larry Cherry would come and say, I need to touch you up. We're getting ready to shoot. And I kept trying to run away from him to say, no, I'm good. Because, you know, sometimes, if you don't know your hair person who's coming, who's going to cut your hair, they didn't know the holes and the stuff that you don't want to be shown, be revealed. So I would try to dodge. Larry Cherry said, no, I'm good, I'm good, I'll get my hair cut later. Larry said, look, I got you. And once Larry Cherry, the master, cut my hair, that was it. He was my barber on the movie. He became my personal barber. I would go to see him in his shop. He would come to see our office at Drop Squad Pictures, and we became good friends as well. And
close.
He was one of my very close good friends, as him, Bill, and I were. And my mom is saying, tell people who Bill Nunn is. We all know who Bill Nunn is. Bill Nunn is the actor who played Radio Raheem, best known for Do the Right Thing, but also in New Jack City, regarding Henry with Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
And things like that. But the Radio Raheem really ties us into what's going on today. Larry, before we get into talking about our buddy, let's just talk briefly. What do you think about Donald Trump? Because you're from Long Island, and you're familiar with Mr. Trump. What's your assessment about this guy? I probably know what it is, but go ahead.
First of all, I cannot believe that he's gotten this far. That's the first thing. I mean, I think it's speaking to a voice that's been percolating. I mean, it's always been there, but when Obama got elected, I mean, I've never seen a sitting senator say my job is to make him a one-term president. So right there, you know where it all started with the birther movement. I don't want to say I can't believe it because it's happening, and we're seeing what the results are of 8 years of dispassion and he keeps talking about race and everything he's done cultivated this what's going on right now with the people.
Right.
It's, I mean, I can't believe it. I can't believe. I just. Oh my gosh. I don't know what to say.
He's a character. We all know who he is. Let's be done with Donald Trump. Let's talk. Go ahead, Larry.
He's a character. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Now, I didn't give you the rest of your props. People should know that once Larry Cherry cuts your hair, you never forget. So a lot of us were upset about the fact that Larry started cutting, you know, he started cutting actors' hair, started cutting other actors' hair. Next thing you know, he's cutting Denzel Washington's hair when we did the movie Malcolm X, right? And Larry
That's
was
correct.
Local. You know, in between movies, you could call Larry and go get your hair cut. Well, once he worked on Denzel's head, Denzel said, I'm going to make you my hair guy. And Larry Cherry is never available anymore because he's always on location with Mr. Denzel Washington. Most recently working on the movie Fences.
Uh-huh.
And Larry has been working with Denzel ever since. So you're not going to be able to go in the shop and find this master barber, because he is working for one of Hollywood's biggest stars ever. And Larry, why don't you talk about some of your first experiences with Bill way back then?
Oh, man.
Like when you
first. Well, you know, just like you during school days, he didn't really want me to cut his hair either, because, you know, he didn't know what I was going to do.
He didn't know you.
He did not know what I was gonna do. He had no idea. I was trying to tell him this is new. So everything was relatively new. We was, you know, the flat tops and cutting designs. That wasn't even happening at that time. So I was trying to get everybody to feel comfortable about what I was trying to do. And I mean, it was funny. It was funny, but we got it all together. You know, if it wasn't for you, for all the fellas trusting in me and my ability, I don't think it would have never worked any other way, because that's the only way I would have it. Because I want everybody to feel good, and when everybody feels good, it shows on the screen. And
exactly.
That makes a good movie. That makes a good movie. When you feel good about yourself, and you know it's right, and you can go out there and perform. That's just one less thing you're worrying about when you're doing your thing. I try to stay out of the way of the actor, and I want you to look right, whatever your character is. So I like to study up and know what you're going to do, so I know what I got to do.
Who else? What other movie did you work on?
Oh, I worked on. With Bill Nunn, I did New Jack City.
Uh-huh.
He's Got Game. School Days, Do the Right Thing, and I worked with him on a play when he was on Broadway doing Raising in the Sun with Puffy, Sean Combs. Uh-huh. He was in that play. He was in that play, and I worked with him on that one. But
wow.
Bill and I, ever since School Days, we've always, you know, I try to collaborate with him on different looks. Sometimes I would go to his house and get the looks. I would start it for him, and then he would go on and hopefully they would try to follow what I was doing. But it was a lot of work we did.
Are you available to give someone else a haircut?
Oh, absolutely.
Wayne Gilman?
Oh, no.
I had a feeling you were going in that direction.
Absolutely.
Oh,
you know,
my goodness. You must be channeling my mother now.
I would talk to my man Eric. I would talk to my man Eric, and we've got to set that up so we can make this happen.
Yeah. Because once Larry Cherry, and if you can catch him. Now, Larry, Bill actually predicted, we were talking earlier today, Larry, and Bill actually predicted that Denzel was going to scoop you up. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, it's a funny story. I was, I got a commercial with, I did Shaquille O'Neal commercial, his first commercial coming out of college, and it was going to be taking place in Los Angeles and Las Vegas. And right before I was coming out to Los Angeles, I was going to do a movie in New York that I had talked to the producer, and I thought everything was set. And then when I went in to sign my deal, It was different, but the producer that I was supposed to talk to wasn't here, so I didn't sign, and I just went to California, And when I got out to California, you know, that was my first time out. I didn't have the right clothes or anything, so I came out, went to Las Vegas. When I came back from Las Vegas to Los Angeles, the place I was supposed to stay, I couldn't. I didn't have a place to stay, so I called up Bill. Bill came over and picked me up. He took me all around Los Angeles, told me so much about L.A. And then I was telling him how I had just lost this movie. And I don't think, you know, I don't know what I was going to do next. And he kind of, like, made a joke of, said, nah, don't even worry about it, man. You know what? You're going to end up working with Denzel anyway, and none of us are going to be able to get a haircut. And I just kind of looked at him and laughed. So when it happened, he was the first person I called who would know, because it was just, I don't even know how to explain it. But he said it in a joking way, but we said a lot of things to each other many times in a joking way, and it became true. So, you know, things like that stick to me.
Well, Larry, yeah. Listen, when you're doing movies yourself, who cuts your hair?
Oh, I cut my own hair. I mean, I cut my own hair because I'm not even worried about what I look like. My thing is making sure you look right. I don't care about what I look like. I might fix it up about if I'm going to an event, because then I have to take my hat off. But usually I have a hat on every day.
I have one other question, and then Eric and Wayne can take it over. What kind of hairstyle or haircut would you give, what's his name? Trump.
What's his name?
Trump?
Yeah. Now I was going to ask that myself, yeah.
You know what? I don't know. He's like, you know what, there's a movie out. There's an old movie called The Dead Zone. I don't know if you heard of it. But that movie, The Dead Zone, if you can get a hold of that movie, that's what the candidate reminds me of.
So
you would give him the Christopher Walken?
Yes. No, not the Christopher Walken, but, you know, on that realm, it's just, it's crazy. It's like, I cannot believe what's going on.
Yeah, he's a crazy guy, man. You just talked about Bill predicting you working for Denzel, but you also predicted, Larry, that Bill was going to get a pretty big break during that time that you were staying with him. That story that you told me earlier today.
Bill, when he was doing the TV series for Paramount, we were on a lot, and he was showing me around on the lot, and we ran into Brandon Tartikoff, and Brandon called him over. We spoke, and he introduced me to Mr. Tartikoff.
And let me interrupt you real quick right here, Larry. I just want to let people know Brandon Tartikoff was a television executive, Hollywood executive, who was the head of the studio. He was head of Paramount at the time, right, Larry?
Yes, he was. He was the head of Paramount at the time.
And this is after, you know, Do the Right Thing, which is what kind of...
I think this was after Do the Right Thing, and I think it was before Regarding Henry. Because I think this is what kind of... I'm not sure, so I don't quote me on it, but I think... But he... when we met Brandon talked to us on the set, and he was on his way to another show, and he said, listen, I want you guys to come by my office tomorrow by 1 o'clock. But the way he was talking to Bill, and it was just genuine, I just felt that it was a genuine meeting. So when we left, I told Bill, I said, you know, he's going to call you, and you may have to come in early. And Bill looked at me and said, no, Larry, that's not going to happen, because this man is just too busy. I don't even think he'll have time for us tomorrow. So I just think he did that to be courteous, to be nice. I said, I don't think so, Bill. So the next morning, he got a call about 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning, and I was asleep. And when I was sleeping in the front, when he came, I said, "Nah, you would not believe who called me this morning." I said, "It's Tartikoff, right?" He said, "Man, you called it." I did not believe it. So we went down that morning, and we had a great talk, great conversation with Mr. Kartikoff. He offered him another show. He offered me a show. It was just one of those chance meetings that you never forget. And the fact that he had so much respect for Bill, I mean, I could see it, and it was just genuine. I mean, it was one of the most beautiful meetings I've seen between two individuals. It was a beautiful meeting. We had a great time, and that's something I'll never forget. Never.
And you know, Bill Nunn was anybody who knows him or have seen him in any of his movies, he's a big guy. Bill was a big guy, and he was the nicest big teddy bear because he had one of those personalities which was just friendly, always engaging people, and it was he had a big personality, but a big nice, warm. People
big
so warm and comfortable. And a very good actor.
You know, a funny thing, when we're doing New Jack City, there's a scene in New Jack City where the Dutter Man is hanging this man off the bridge, off the 59th Street Bridge.
Yeah.
And so as we're trying to do this scene, I mean, first of all, we're having such a good time because we're laughing. So Bill's out there laughing and joking. So once they set the harness up to have this man hanging off the bridge, you know, he's supposed to go in and start acting like he's shaking. So as he's shaking him on the bridge, and I mean, it was a long shot, so it wasn't like a close shot. So there were no production people around. There was no cameras around because we were shooting from it. It was an aerial shot. And then we were off the bridge, so it was like a really long shot. But it was so funny. It was so real that people on the bridge actually thought he was trying to throw the man off the bridge. And they were stopping their car, trying to tell him to stop. And he's trying to tell them I'm doing the movie. I said, oh, it was one of the most funniest scenes I've ever seen. But the only Bill can handle something like that, and everybody was it worked out. But it was really one of those funny scenes that happened.
And this is the opening scene for anybody, just to recap, for anybody who hasn't seen New Jack City. This is the opening scene of the movie. And as Larry is talking about, the aerial shot from a helicopter that zooms into Bill holding this guy, Bill's character, the Dutter Man, because his character stuttered, you know, and because they call him the Dutter Man, because he would be like, so Bill's, you know, character, he was the enforcer, so he was supposed to be hanging this guy off the bridge, and Wesley, who plays Nino Brown in the movie, is the drug kingpin, the gangster, and has his enforcer, Bill, hanging because the guy owes them money. So that's the scene that Larry described. Very, very masterfully done. I got to give Mario Van Peebles, who directed that movie, credit for that, because it was a hell of a way to open up the film. And I'm sure that, like you said, that Bill was letting people know, you know, that that was probably whispering outside.
And because he did so much theater, Bill was able to. You can go off script and still be in the pocket. You know what I mean? It's like you couldn't trip him up. I mean, he was just he can flow with you. Whatever way you go, he can go. It was
right.
It was just fun to watch. Especially when it's like two good actors. I mean, the scene with him and Denzel and he got game. Oh, that was one of the best, funniest scenes. I mean, it was hard for us to keep it together because they were both going at each other. And Bill, to say something, I mean, there was one line he said as they're going back and forth. He was like, oh, you about to cut me out of the deal. I just want to whip my beak. And when he said that, everybody fell out. it just was out of nowhere. You know, it was things that he would say that you just didn't hear before. That's what made it so beautiful. So, I mean, he was great. I miss him a lot.
Listen, for, you know, for people who are just tuning in, you know, this is in tribute to Bill Nunn. Bill Nunn is Eric's good friend, and, you know, Larry's good friend. Wayne, you know Bill Nunn, and everyone, you remember Radio Raheem in Spike
Lee.
Do the right thing.
Do the right thing.
Yeah, like you said,
he played a very good orderly in Regard to Henry.
And in regarding Henry, which he played opposite Harrison Ford.
Wow.
Harrison
yes.
Ford it plays a character who has a traumatic brain injury after a robbery at a store. Very arrogant character. He comes back, so Bill
yes.
plays his therapist. And the acting was seamless because it was, you know, the character was an ingratiating, a warm guy trying to help, and Bill would just flowed with it. I mean, it was really good work. But he had that
yes.
improvisational
yes.
ability to really kind of, because he was a stage actor, Bill could improv, go up on a line.
That's
what
that
is.
He could improv with anybody.
And
I tell you, if you don't mind, I just want to say that going back to New Jack City, the one thing that impressed me about him was his natural ability to do the stuttering act. Because,
yeah.
you know, I remember him and some of the work that he's done, but for some reason, the way he did that, you would think that's how he was in real life, you know?
Exactly.
And it was
exactly.
not that way at all, obviously. But, you know, quite a talent, a great loss.
Absolutely.
He was, because he was very extremely articulate and well-spoken, well-read, well-educated. He was actually in the movie Glory. The scene got cut out. But he was telling me about, you know, there was a scene where the slaves were arguing whether they revolt or whatever. And he was, you know, going back and forth with somebody. He said I think he was acting with opposite Michael Guest or maybe Denzel or someone. Mike Guest was an actor from Newark. He was also in Malcolm X, played one of the assassins, who since he's passed on.
Yes.
But they were going back and forth, and Bill being, you know, knowing the history, the time period, he said, "I'm not, whatever, you scoundrel." which wasn't in the script, but that was something somebody would have said at that time. And he said,
yeah.
"That fell out." So he threw that little extra, you know, improv in and just kind of jammed
that
him
was,
up and tried
that,
to get actor.
That,
you know?
That was Bill. That was Bill. That,
you know, he told
that
me.
Was that was good. He could put something in the moment at the right time that just made it like wow, you know, there was something else.
And also we're talking about a guy who would never, you know, I mean he went on to be after Do the Right Thing and regarding Henry, Bill had a great career run and working with like A-list stars. Like Harrison Ford was an A-list star when Bill worked with him at the height of his career.
That's right.
And Bill was a guy who didn't buy into the Hollywood stuff, made people feel so at ease. That's why someone like Brandon Tartikoff or any number of other people just liked being around him. He was a joy to be around, a great person to work with, would take you to the Hollywood parties. I say that, you know, like Larry, we've been friends ever since those, all that time ago in school days. And, you know, sometimes in this business, some people are your friends when you're doing well and they want to be
That's
on your level. They want to hang out with the working people. I've had friends like that who are not friends of mine anymore because when you're riding high, they're great to be riding high with you because I guess they want to project some Rat Pack type of scenario. But what happens is that, you know, Bill was never that type of person. Whether you were rich, poor,
no.
up or down, always. And he never, I guess because we were so close and Larry and I are close and all of us are close, it was never that kind of turn your nose up at anybody. And I think that's what made people, endeared people to him because he was a regular guy. And when you think about his family history, and I'm going to let Larry talk about that, but his father was instrumental, really probably the main guy, in putting together the legendary Pittsburgh Steelers defense, the Steel Curtain of the 1970s. And
yeah.
His father was named Bill Nunn Sr.
I didn't know he did that much with the Steelers until I went out to visit Bill one day and sat down with his father, and his father started talking to me. And he started telling me that some of the stuff he's done because, you know, he thought I was out there doing some movie or something. So I guess he never really engaged in conversation with other people that came to visit Bill. But because I came just to see Bill and I, you know, sat down with his father, you know, spent the whole day with him. It was like going back through history, some of the stuff that he'd done. And I didn't know that his grandfather was just a part of the Pittsburgh Courier. So,
right.
I mean, there's a lot of history.
One of the legendary black newspapers in the country. His grandfather was either an editor-in-chief at the Pittsburgh Courier. I forget exactly what it was, but his grandfather was instrumental in running that newspaper,
wow.
one of the legendary black newspapers in the country
yeah.
from back in the day. And in Pittsburgh, his family and his father is pretty well known for being a part of the Steelers and the black community and the Pittsburgh
Courier.
Yeah,
they named the hall after him.
They named the hall after him.
They named the hall after him at the Pittsburgh's complex. They named a hall after his father.
Because if you watch the history of the NFL, and I watched a show about the Steelers, you know, on the NFL Channel, and they talked about the Steelers back in those days, and they said one thing that the Steelers, what made them great was that this ability. They had a scout, Bill Nunn, who reached out to a lot of the black colleges where he got the L.C. Craigwork, found the Joe Greens
sure.
and all these people. And that's what helped make the Pittsburgh Steelers legendary in the 70s was that Bill's father recruited a lot of these African-American football players
wow.
from a lot of these HBCUs that really helped to make the Steelers what they are today.
Wow.
And,
it changed the game. It changed the college game forever.
And that's right. And got the most Super Bowl rings, and Bill Nunn's father was instrumental in that. I don't believe they would have won those Super Bowls had it not been for his father and the work that his father did. And we just want to talk about that. Bill went to Morehouse. That's how he met Spike Lee. Bill was ahead of Spike, as was Sam Jackson and Sam's wife, and they had a whole group of people. They all went to Morehouse together, and as I said, they were a little bit ahead of Spike. And so that's how Spike ended up putting them in the movies once he got, because he would go to see players and see these guys in them. Bill told me a story. He worked on a documentary about the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he called himself the Jackie Robinson of ball boys because all those years ago, he broke the color line for being a ball boy in football. Because his father was a scout, Bill was able to be a ball boy during these years, his early years in the Steelers' legendary regime. And he was a ball boy with Art Rooney Jr., who was the owner of the Steelers. The Rooney family owns the Pittsburgh Steelers. And at this time, Art, who owns the Steelers now, him and Bill were friends, and they were the two ball boys for the team. And as a joke, Bill told me about this, and he did a documentary about the Steelers, which is still in the can somewhere. And I encourage him to try to come out with it, and maybe, you know, we can all get together and work to produce that for him. But he tells a story about him and Art Rooney deciding to steal. Well, you know, the players had curfew, so they had to go to bed and stuff. These guys decided to steal Mean Joe Green's car and take it for a joyride around town while Mean Joe Green. This ain't Mean Joe Green is legendary for being Mean Joe Green. And they stole his car and took it around, and Joe Green never knew. They brought it back, parked it, never knew. And in this footage that Bill showed me, he's telling Joe Green this for the first time. Joe Green, who still is older than Bill, who is bigger than Bill, who still looks like he could have played football. And Bill told him, Bill said, you know, you never knew this, but Art and I, you know, back in the day, we stole your car, and we took it for a joyride. And Joe looked at him and said, my car? Bill said, yeah, we just, you never knew that. But he said, no, you didn't take my car. And Bill said, no, we did. We took your car, and, you know, it was just a joyride. You never found out. It looked like, for a minute, it looked like Joe was getting ready to say, you little. But it was just. that was a Bill Nunn sense of humor, you know, and I'm quite sure from those days on, this guy, Bill, had this sense of humor. He told me another story about working with George C. Scott, right, on a TV series, short lived TV series, a TV movie. And he worked on this movie, and they were doing a scene, and George C. Scott, legendary actor, was in the scene. It was in a car, And Bill said, I kept flubbing the line, and I could tell George was getting frustrated. And he said, George C. Scott just said to him, Billy, you want to just reach over and smack me in the face? Basically saying, you're killing me, you know. But you know, this guy had this delivery that would just make you crack up, you know. Down the street, and he looks like this big guy. And after Radio Raheem, sometimes we would be placed so people would recognize him. And if he didn't feel like being bothered, he'd just give him that Radio Raheem look.
what he didn't like was what used to drive him crazy was when someone would come up to him and say, "Where do I know you from?" And he said, "If you don't know where you see me from, you don't know me," and walk away.
That's right.
He do it every time. So you say, I can't stand people coming up to me talking about, where did I see you before? And he would say, well, if you don't remember where you saw me, then you don't know me. So
right.
Step off. I mean, he was just like that sometimes. He was funny like that.
And also, as you remember, like Bill, this is back in the early, we did school days in the late 80s. And going on to our friendship in the early 90s, Bill Nunn, who was in his early to mid-30s when we did school days, said he was the oldest rap fan alive.
And
knew all the rap lyrics to a lot of songs. And you were saying, Larry, that, you know, he expanded.
He was critiquing rap. He was telling you what was a good rap and what was nonsense. And it's funny, the last conversation we had about rap, which was recently, like when I was out there this summer, he was telling me how the rap, they're not really saying anything as far as trying to, it's not social conscious rap like it used to be when he started. Because he was definitely into conscious rap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he
said
it's
not
as
much
like,
now. You know, he could tell you the artists that do that today, but that's where he really was at with that rap music.
So
Public Enemy, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Now, I was just going to say, I would imagine Public Enemy and, you know, that kind of material as opposed to what you hear.
Yeah, Public Enemy, KRS-One.
Yeah.
Tribe Called Quest. I can, all those he turned me on to.
Uh-huh.
Right.
I mean, because I'm a really big fan of jazz music. I love it. So he actually introduced me to some of the rap. And, I mean, that was my introduction. Was him and my son.
That's right, because Mr. Cherry was hanging out with all the rap legends. Why don't you tell some of the folks, some of the rap legends, I mean, excuse me, some of the jazz legends
that used
to cut their hair.
Let me see, Max Roach. Max Roach. Miles Davis.
Oh.
Art.
Dizzy Gillespie. Art Blakey.
Art Blakey,
Terrence Blanchard. Wynton Marcellus. There's so many of them. Sonny Rollins. Lester Bowie. Ron Carter. There's so many. Oh, Freddie Hubbard. I don't want to leave anybody out because I worked on a lot of their album covers. I did, you know, hand makeup for a lot of the covers they did back in those days. So that's what really got me to know them personally, you know, and they became clients of mine. It was a privilege. It was a blessing, so I can say.
You just sort of dated yourself because I'm thinking that you're, you know, younger, and based on the names you called, and some of them are no longer with us, I would assume you're around my age or maybe older, you know.
Yes.
Not to say, it's just a point of reference. I'm speculating because radio's a theater of mine.
Definitely.
I don't mean to embarrass you, you know, but I'm 65, right?
You know, it's a blessing to get to this age.
Yeah,
every
I hear
day
you.
Is a blessing. Every day is a blessing. And I remind you of that. every day.
I hear
every
that.
Day. Every day I tell him.
Either that or he's very accomplished. So,
no, I tell him, man, is, listen, when it's a great day when you wake up in the morning and you can your feet hit the floor and you can stand up, that's a beautiful day right there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We take that for granted, you know.
Uh-huh.
So I always say, let's start right there. And if you get to stay positive from the beginning, it's going to be a great day.
That's correct. Absolutely. You know, I'm looking at Bill's IMDb here, and he's been in so many Internet Movie Database, where you can go on and find out about the entertainment industry movies. You can look up your favorite actors, see what movies they've been in. And one of the last jobs Bill did was Sirens, a show called Sirens about EMS workers in, I believe, Chicago, if I'm not mistaken. And he got that job because Dennis Leary was an executive producer, and Larry, correct me if I'm mistaken. I remember talking to Bill about it because he had worked with Dennis Leary on a show called The Job, which was a cop show, a series that ABC canceled way too soon because it was a really good show. And he played the actor Dennis Leary's partner, police officers, Dennis Leary from the hit show Rescue Me that was on FX a few years ago about firefighters.
Right.
So he played Dennis Leary's partner on the show. Fast forward to all these years later, Bill was going through his challenges, battling cancer and things like that. Couldn't work, and they wanted him to do this job, and he couldn't walk. I mean, he couldn't be on his feet a lot. And Larry, you can pick it up here, what they did for Bill, because this is a testament to how much people loved him. And when they wanted, you know, he was still getting jobs. Even though he was sick, he was getting offers, you know. And they say once you leave Hollywood, you know, you're kind of out of sight, out of mind. But Bill was living in Pittsburgh. They were calling him up looking for him in Pittsburgh. So, Larry, you want to pick it up?
They made it so he would not have to walk on the set. So they always had a situation where he was either standing or sitting, but he never had to do a walking scene. But that's how much respect
he had, and
the love they had for him, that they would set it up because he was a pleasure to work with. You know, and I think that was, how often did that happen?
Yeah. Because, you know, you spend a lot of hours, like any job, and certainly making movies and TV shows. Those are long days, long hours that can be. And certainly, you know, you want to get the best people for the job, but sometimes you get some people that just aren't agreeable people. They're the type of people that are maybe high maintenance or, you know, some people that are stars that are just not nice people. And so you want people that are easygoing, that you're going to enjoy being around, and that after 16 hours, you know, they're not going to be that type of person that's going to start creating stress for everybody. And Bill was not only...
You know what? You're speaking so much truth there, because it's like there's a lot of talented actors out there, but in any profession, I don't think anybody would put up with 8 hours, 9 hours of a headache, because you're not going to get anything done, and you're not going to get anything... very productive-wise, you know, because you're not into it, see, so you're not going to get the best work. So I totally agree with that, you know, what you just said. I mean, you got to be able to get along with people.
And Bill was not only the opposite of that, he was an easygoing person, but he made the set life better, because he was the type of person to make people feel comfortable, would joke around with people, would make people laugh. So not only was he an easygoing person, but he made actually the environment better, and made it fun. We have a business that can be a whole lot of fun. We work intensively, but you can also have a lot of fun while you're doing it, and you really can enjoy it. And Bill was one of those type of people to make the set. He made the set a real fun place to be on and to be around, and that was really why people loved him, I think, so much, and why people liked him. Some, just to let people know, some of the really great movies he's been in that I've kind of forgot. Sister Act with Whoopi. He was in the two Sister Acts with Whoopi. He was in a Spider-Man series with the first Spider-Man series with Tobey Maguire. He was also in a great movie called Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead, which is a really good movie starring Andy yeah, comedy thriller starring Andy Garcia, Treat Williams, and it's really, if you get a chance to watch that movie, it's really one of those really cult classic movies. He was in Idlewild. He was in, as I said, The Job. And these are just a few because he has 71 credits to his, he has 71 products, productions that he's been in. So, I mean, he's done a lot of work. And Extreme Measures and Bulletproof. I mean, these are just a lot of things, TV, movies, Money Train, so True Crime. I mean, these are a lot of things that Bill has been in and worked on that are really legendary movies. So I would suggest that anybody go Death by Temptation. Larry, I know you remember that one.
Oh, yes.
James Bond, our good.
That was a blast to work on. We had so much, you know, we had fun. That's why those the things that you're talking about are decimated. It was a pleasure to come to work. We always had fun. That's what made it such a blessing to come to work every day with great actors, and we were friends. It was like family, and we had a great time. Mm-hmm. And I miss those days. I miss those days, you know. Absolutely.
Yeah, another one was Kiss the Girls, which was with Morgan Freeman,
yes.
Which was the Alex Cross character created by James Patterson. The Alex Cross character was the black psychologist doctor. Mm-hmm. It has been running
right.
A little bit on.
That was another great movie.
Along Came a Spider was one of the sequels to it. Kiss the Girls was the first one, and Bill was in that with Morgan Freeman. So, you know, he's always popping up. I mean, there's the Legend of 1900. That's the movie I was talking to you about earlier today, Larry, when I said Bill shot that somewhere in Prague. And he was telling me about Bill
what
told
was the, name of it?
The Legend of 1900.
Mm-hmm.
And that was shot somewhere in Prague. It was, and he played a character that worked in the engine room in the ship.
Wow.
And he was, like, really the only black one in the movie. But they shot that in Prague, and Bill was telling me about, you know, there was this little bar he used to go to hang out, and he said he went in there, and they were partying, like a little disco. And he said he got up in there dancing, and the women started dancing around. He said he felt like Danny Terrio up in there. And those of you know, you got to be a little, Wayne, you know who Danny Terrio is.
Yeah, yeah.
Danny Terrio was an old kind of dancer guy who did the choreography, I think, for Saturday Night Fever and that kind of that John Travolta character.
And then he had his own TV show for a minute, I think, after that.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah,
wow.
Some, you know, he predates that whole dancing thing now, in a way.
Right, exactly. So he would just Runaway Jury, which was a really good movie about the jury.
Yeah, I forgot about that one, too.
Which one was that?
Yeah, so many great, and some of the backstories that Bill was a great storyteller.
Yeah,
he could tell
you
some of the things that were going on in the set that would have you in tears. I wish I could I wish I could say it like him, but it just wouldn't be as interesting. You'd have to hear it in his own words. So like
right,
in his own words, he would have me in tears because he was that. So much stuff.
You know, Bill
was still trying to get over it.
Yeah, Bill was responsible for me getting a huge break when I moved to California. I went out to California to visit. I was going with a girl at the time. Took her out to California. It's kind of like a birthday present. It was about 2 years, maybe after Do the Right Thing. Bill was out there working around this time, Larry, that you were out there, because it was shortly after you guys met with Brandon Tartikoff that he had gotten that show that he was doing called, I forget the name of it, with David Keith. So Bill was doing this show. And I came out there with this girl I was going with. As I'm looking at his IMDb, I'm going to try to find the name of the show as well. So I went by the set. You know, to visit him on Paramount's lot. And he told the cast director, because he was one of the stars of the show, him and an actor named David Keith. And he told the casting director that this is my buddy, this is my buddy Eric. I want him to be on the show.
and let's find him something to do. And so the casting director was like, great. So I came back. A couple of weeks later because there were some other opportunities for me. And the casting director, I called him up. The show was in hiatus, but I still met this casting director there. And the casting director called me in for another show, Cheers. And it was just a one-line show. And I ended up getting the job on the show. And this casting director proceeded to bring me in for a lot of auditions. I got several jobs from him. A top casting director now by the name of Jeff Greenberg. Really nice guy. But that helped once I moved to L.A. And that helped me get
That's
a lot
Bill.
Of work. And that was because of Bill. And because
That's
he was
Bill.
The type of friend to see. You know, he was the type of friend that would take you in the room and say, this is my buddy here. Can you do something for him? He's a good actor. He'll vouch for you. You had to be good, though. He wasn't just going to, you know, he wasn't
That's
just
right.
going to try to get your job. You had to be good. So,
Bill, and, you know, he's not so much for his theater out there in Pittsburgh, too.
I want to talk about
theater.
Because we wanted the Bill Nunn Outreach Project, I think is the name of this project, right, Larry?
He is
trying to get expose young people to the works of August Wilson. And had he not been sick, he probably would have been in Fences, right, playing the role of Gabe, right, Larry, you think?
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I know if he put like this, even if he didn't play the part of Gabe, if he was able, we would have found something for him.
Right.
We would have
because
found
you said
something
that
he for him.
He did it on Broadway, right?
You know,
he did it on,
yeah, we did it on Broadway, but I'm telling you, when we were out there, he actually thought, you know, Bill was well enough. I'm quite sure that he probably would have tried to stick him in there somewhere where he'd
right.
give him a line or something. You know, if it was at the club or something in the movie or whatever, I think he would have made it happen. Things that would have been happening.
Right. Well,
because
they
got along so well together on He Got Game. It was getting more better, but that was something else.
Well, we're coming to the end of the show. We got a minute to go. Larry, my brother, I will see you soon. I want to thank you for calling in and sharing your experiences with our brother, Bill. We love him.
Oh,
we
thank you.
We love him. And
you.
I love you, brother. We've been friends for a minute. So
love you, man.
I love you, too. We're always going to be friends. And I'll talk to you soon, all right? Thanks, Larry Cherry.
Thanks,
all right,
Larry.
Thank you.
Okay, Larry. Good night. Take care.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. And we're gonna get that haircut right.
I'll bring him up.
All right, we're gonna make that happen.
All right, Larry. Take care.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Once again, it's coming to the end of the show, Mr. Wayne Gilman. Sir, you want to say goodbye real quick?
Yeah, my sympathy goes out to both you guys. You know, I only got to know him the hour that we were on with him the last time.
5 seconds,
that was
Wayne.
Great.
Thank you, Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman. My name is Eric Payne. You are?
Kay Thompson Live,
the Kay Thompson Live show. Listen to us every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Thank you very much. We'll see you again next week, everybody. God bless Bill Nunn.